CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The front lines. We begin in Gaza. The major action said to be at a close. The Rafah Brigade said to have been destroyed. Sinwar, the mastermind of the villainy, is still not found. He's said to be on the move. There's talk of letting Sinwar walk. Now, he's a man who's murdered before and let go before. There was a man named Shalit who was taken prisoner by Hamas for many years, and in the exchange for one IDF soldier, valuable to Israel, Sinwar and lots of other people, maybe hundreds of other people, were released. Sinwar is a mass murderer who's always been a threat his whole life, and Israel now has to deal with him again. But that's not the news in Rafah. The news in Rafah is that it's secure at this moment, except, Jonathan, one more time, the Philadelphia corridor. In the week that we've not talked, has there been any decision-making about how that is to be secured?
No. And I would say that, if anything, the last week or so for me has been really interesting as I have started talking about more publicly about the Philadelphia corridor. Obviously, you and I have talked about the challenges that it poses and what Israel might gain or might not gain by staying there. As we've explored the question of whether the Camp David accords may be in violation because of the tunnels, there have been some interesting statements that have come out, notably even one by the IDF, which said that as they secured the Philadelphia corridor, they found no active tunnels. They only found 9 of them. And that is a significant shift from some of the reporting that we have seen from Israel in past weeks, where before this we were hearing that there were dozens of tunnels or perhaps hundreds of tunnels. That at least one tunnel was the height that would allow for a truck to drive through. And now all of a sudden, the Israelis have reversed course and they're saying that they've only found 9 and that they've been defunct for an unknown period of time. The narrative continues to shift. I believe that there is still a real need on the part of the Israeli and American governments to keep Egypt sheltered from these withering attacks that I think it has opened up itself to over these several weeks or even months. The story of the Philadelphia corridor has yet to be told, the true story of how much got through. We know that that is the only place where people and cash and fighters can come through, whether above ground or below ground. So now the question is, when did these tunnels become defunct, if they even were being used in the first place? How has this all been happening? That is still, to this day, not been made clear by the Egyptians, by the U.S., or by Israel. It is something of a mystery, except we know some basic facts, and that is that that is still the only way that all of this weapons and material and cash could come through.
There is the Rafah crossing. Who was in charge of security at the Rafah crossing until October 7th?
Well, it was Egypt. And the question is, was Egypt doing a good job of this? There was obviously coordination with the U.S. and with the Israelis. But the question is, did they turn a blind eye? Were people getting paid off? I mean, we know that this is a rather common phenomenon, John, where, I was talking to a colleague yesterday. Apparently, the Jordanian border guards have been paid off to allow for drugs and weapons and cash to come in from Syria. The Iranians are just increasing the pay that these people would be getting from the state in order to ensure that smuggling continues. The same can probably be said for what has been happening along that border, that roughly 9-mile border between the Sinai Peninsula and Gaza. But again, I think what needs to be stressed here is that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence here in the U.S., the Mossad, the Mukhabarat, the intelligence services in Egypt have yet to explain to the world how or to what extent that border has been compromised. And until we get some answers, the questions are going to continue to swirl. Members of Congress are going to be looking at Egypt with skepticism and wondering what they're hiding from us and whether they are still upholding the Camp David Accords and whether they should still be getting that roughly $1 billion a year from U.S. taxpayers.
War of the North, we go to Lebanon. The drones and the missiles, the anti-tank missiles, continue. The evacuated hundreds, 60,000, 80,000, I hear different numbers, continue to be dishomed. The people who are living there are terrified. You only have 15 seconds in some instances to get to a shelter, maybe 30 seconds. However, the debate continues in Israel. Although this week, Jonathan, there was suggestion in the headlines that they're coming to a decision. I know they'd like 6 months, maybe even a year, to rest and reconstitute. However, Beirut, Hezbollah, continues to provoke. Do they want Israel to attack?
This is the ultimate question, John. We simply don't know. And it's very interesting that when I speak to my Israeli colleagues, they continue to say that Hezbollah doesn't want a war, that it actually is quite content with this war of attrition that it has been waging. It has, as you noted, forced the evacuation of northern Israel communities. They're able to strike deeper into Israel with relative impunity. Of course, Israel strikes back, and we see the pager attack today, and there was a drone attack as well that targeted someone or several people deep inside Lebanon. So it's not as if there is no cost, but it is relatively low cost for the victory that Hezbollah has achieved. But now the question that I continue to come back to is, if they wanted to keep the status quo, why was it that this Iran-backed terror group almost fired something like 500 or 600 missiles into Israel several weeks ago? That surely would have provoked a much wider war. That was a provocation that cannot be explained by anyone. And I do suspect that we're going to see other provocations that could prompt Israel to engage in that wider war. Assessments today suggest, we hear it from the news today, that Israel is closer than it's ever been. And perhaps the shakeup that you and I just discussed, John, of Gideon Saar and a change of the chief of staff, that may actually pave the way for a war in the north coming sooner than anyone had previously expected.
30 seconds, Jonathan. Does Iran gain from that war? Can we say this is a plus?
It all depends on how you look at this. On the one hand, they could lose their largest proxy, their most powerful proxy. On the other hand, they may be able to use that proxy to do severe damage to Israel, or they could use the ensuing war as a distraction as they decide to dash for a bomb. There are lots of options at Iran's disposal, and we will have to wait and see how they use that time or opportunity.
Senior Vice President, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Jonathan Shanzer. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.